Shalom everyone, this is going to be a Passover video, just a quick idea to get us going into the Seder night. So we'll start with the word Seder itself. The Passover meal, the festive meal, is called the Seder meal. And the entire night is called Leil HaSeder, the night of the Seder. But what does Seder mean? Well, Seder means order. There's something about the way this evening and the Haggadah book that we read, it's all very orderly. We have a list of instructions, the simanim, and we're going step by step, and we're reading everything. And even as we're reading it, it's all very structured. It's based on a lot of numbers and a lot of formulas, and something very orderly. But there's something that we know from experience, which is that whenever we try to maintain order, especially in an evening that we are planning ahead to, and we're putting a lot of effort into this, and we have a list of guests, and we have all the meals, and we have all the cleaning before, whenever we try to very sort of forcefully maintain order, we lose that order. That order falls apart, and chaos ensues. Disorder comes into the picture, and things never go according to plan. There's always something that breaks, and someone gets annoyed, and something that wasn't planned, and the more we planned this, the more chaotic it becomes for us, and the more we lose our sense of control. And that's basically the reason that chaos happens. It happens because when everything is so planned and so organized and so based on order, we tend to fall into the false belief that we are really in control of anything, and we're not. And so the chaos comes into the picture. And the whole trick is to be there when that chaotic, unexpected, unforeseen element comes into this evening, to realize that this is something meaningful. This is like the test. This is where I need to lose control and regain another kind of control over the situation. Now, this whole tension between order and disorder is really the heart of the Passover holiday and the heart of the night of the Seder. It's called the night of the Seder. It's all order. But as we'll see, there's a sort of hidden element of chaos within this evening. But first we need to, which is basically, by the way, the very concept of what we're celebrating. We're celebrating coming out of bondage. Bondage is when you're constrained, when your life is totally ordered by this master that you have, that you are enslaved to this master, and then you have no control, no freedom. And coming out of this, out of these constraints, right? That's the meaning of Egypt in Hebrew. Mitzrayim can be read as the word meitzarim, which is straits or constraints. It's like a straitjacket. Mitzrayim, Egypt, was like a straitjacket, and coming out of it is coming out into something that's an open desert, a wilderness. It's wild, it's untamable, it's unexpected. We're coming out of a very orderly empire into a wilderness. So the structure of the Seder is very orderly, but the subject matter, what we're celebrating, is the very, very opposite. It's about coming out into a space, an open space of wilderness. So, but first let's look at the order that's in the Haggadah. The Haggadah is a very squarish book. Why do I say it's squarish? Because it's full of quartets. In fact, there are four quartets that we see them all along the Haggadah, and that's the order. Right? The most ordered shape, in a way, is a square. That's why people who are very too orderly, we call them squarish. And so the four quartets, what are they? So the first quartet is the four cups of wine that we drink throughout this evening. There are four cups of wine. This was added to the festive night by the sages. And it corresponds, there's like another quartet within this quartet, which is, it's called the four phrases of redemption, leshonot shel geula, four words that God uses in the verses to refer to describe him taking us out of Egypt. And the words in Hebrew are, ve'hotzeti ve'itzalti ve'ga'alti ve'lakachti. I took out, I rescued, I redeemed, and I took. And it corresponds to four stages of the Exodus, which is the stopping of the actual bondage, and then coming out of the land of Egypt, and then crossing the Red Sea with the Egyptians drowning, and then finally arriving at Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, which is really the final stage of the Exodus. So we have the four cups, and there are these four different words of redemption. Now, the next quartet is, of course, the four questions. There are four questions that the youngest, usually the youngest child at the Seder meal is asking. And really, it's all supposed to be part of something very basic in Jewish education, which is how to ask questions. And the entire tradition of learning that Judaism, that's so central to Judaism, is all about asking questions. And it's not just for the kids, it's for the adults too. And the Hasidic tradition is, after the child finishes asking the questions, then the adult looks up, even the Rebbe would look up at the sky and say, you know, Father, I also have a few questions to ask you. You know, in this, if we're asking questions now. So that's the second quartet. And the third quartet are the four sons of the Haggadah, right? So the sages reading the verses saw that implicit within the verses, the Torah was really addressing four types of children, because the commandment is to teach our children about the Exodus. This is the command. The word Haggadah comes from Vehigadeta lebincha. You shall tell your child about the Exodus. So, but there are all kinds of children, and there are very various types. So the sages, carefully reading the verses, saw that there are four types of children, which is the wise child and the wicked child and the innocent or simple child and the one that cannot ask, that you need to provoke him into asking questions. So that's the second quartet, the third, sorry, quartet. And the final quartet, and probably the most hidden one and least known one, is that the entire Haggadah is really, in a way, a midrash, a commentary on four consecutive verses that can be found in Deuteronomy 26. It has to do with the commandment of Bikurim, of bringing the first fruit to the temple. And when you bring the first fruit, we describe in four verses how we came out of Egypt. And the bulk of the Haggadah is about taking those four verses and really taking them apart and looking at all kinds of ideas that come out of all details within those verses. So there are four quartets. And so the entire Haggadah is very orderly and very squarish, and it's all based on the number four. And four suggests stability, order, symmetry, and there's something about it that's very, very balanced and very calm. And it's very much the energy of, again, planning everything and having this evening be something that we need to control, and we know what we're doing. There's a plan, there's an instruction book, a manual, and we follow the manual, and everything is in order. But the truth of the matter is that there is what I call a hole at the heart of the Haggadah. And this hole is, you can't see it, it's just like a hole. It's not really there, it's there. It's present in its absence. It's there sort of between the lines. You don't see it. And it's a very holy hole. It's a good hole. And it's something that the entire Haggadah sort of goes around. It's at the very heart, the very center of it. And this hole is that there, each of these quartets has a fifth element. Just like in ancient physics, there were the four regular earthly elements. And then you had the fifth element, which was ethereal and spiritual and otherworldly, and it had to do with the soul. And this is where the English word, which is really coming from Greek, quintessential, comes from. It's quintessential, is the quintessence, the fifth essence, or the fifth element. So this is also in the Torah, this structure, this basic pattern. And there are four things that are more regular and present, and you can see them, and they're in the Haggadah. And then there's a fifth element that you can't really see it, and it's sort of hovering in the background. It's like a hole in the center. This is very much a Torah structure. It's a Kabbalistic structure. It all comes from God's name, which is based on, which has four letters. It's called the Tetragrammaton because it has four letters, usually written in as YHVH. In Hebrew, it's Yud, and then Hey, and then Vav, and then another Hey. But there's a fifth level. It comes before the first letter because it's highest when you need to write the letters sort of from top down. And then above the yud, above the first letter, there's a hidden fifth level, which is called, it's simply called the tip of the yud, because the little tiny tip of the yud seems to be pointing at an invisible fifth level. And this is the super conscious level. It's the level of the very essence of God. It's the infinity, the infinite nature of God, the ungraspable, ineffable aspect of godliness. And so this is where the classical Greek picture of the world, that there are four elements and a fifth spiritual element, it's all coming from this structure that the Kabbalah describes as God's four-letter name and the fifth level. So what are the hidden fifths of each of these quartets, right? There are four quartets, and then there's a fifth level. So the first one was the four cups. So this is actually already, it has become over the generations, an actual part of the Seder according to some of the traditions. And this is a fifth cup, that at the very end of the Seder, we take a fifth cup and we fill it and we don't drink it. We leave it on the table, and it's sort of waiting for Elijah the prophet. In case Elijah would come tonight, maybe Elijah would come tonight. Elijah the prophet is the figure that's supposed to herald the coming of the Mashiach, of the Messiah. And he's supposed to come one day before the Messiah and sort of prepare the ground or let us know. So there's a fifth cup which we don't drink. And this image of a cup that we don't drink, it's just like the fifth hidden letter of God's name that we that has no letter, that has no shape. We don't drink it, we don't taste it. It's like a messianic cup. And then the four questions. So this is beautiful. If you learn the Mishnah, you see that the original four questions were not exactly the same as the questions that we have in our own Haggadot. Three of them are there in the Mishnah, but one of them is different. Which is different? It says that on all nights we eat either roasted, stewed, or cooked meat, but on this night all the meat is roasted. Kulotzali, that's the Hebrew term. Later on, so where is this coming from? This was in the temple, when the Beit HaMikdash, when the temple existed, and there was the Paschal lamb, the sacrifice. It was roasted, and the question of how is this night different from all other nights is why is this specifically davka roasted and not something else? And this question we don't ask it because we don't have the temple and we don't have the sacrificial lamb, and instead we ask why are we not sitting up straight, but we're sort of leaning to the side, we're doing hasava, as the question that replaced that question. But ideally, if we were to regain the temple and could go back to the temple, then we would add this question. The last question would be the fifth question. It was originally a fourth, or one of the four, but it will come back in the future as a fifth question. So right now it's sort of lost. We don't have it. And it has to do also with the redemption, only in messianic times. And then there are the four verses. So this is very simple. You just open Deuteronomy 26 and you go to the next verse. And the next verse it says, and he brought us into this place. This is the land, that is the land of Israel. And he gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So this fifth verse is, again, it's not just the Exodus. It's not just coming out of Egypt and receiving the Torah. It's all going all the way and going into the land of Israel, which is again symbolic of the true and full redemption of future messianic times. And by the way, there's also a phrase of redemption, because if you go to the verses that have these words, I took out and I saved and I redeemed and I took, then a fifth word is, and I brought them into the Holy Land. So again, all of the fifth elements here have to do with the messianic times, and it's something that we don't directly experienced during the Seder, but it's there, it's hidden in the Haggadah, because it's like the fifth element, that's, it's not present, you don't see it in any Haggadah except the fifth cup, which, as I said, was added at some point in during history. But it's really symbolic of all the other fifth elements here. Now, what about the fifth son? So this is very interesting and very, very recent. It was only in the previous generation, like the past few decades, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe explained who the fifth son was. And here, this is very interesting, because on the surface, it seems to be going in the opposite direction of all these fifth elements. So he said that there is, when you look at the four sons, right, the wise son and the wicked son and the simple son and the one that can't ask questions, is that there is an order, there's a kind of yiridat hadorot, a deterioration, it's descending, the generations are descending, they're going down. First you have the wise, the talmid chacham, the wise student who learns a lot of Torah, and then you have the rebellious son. He's like the wicked son. He becomes an atheist and he rebels against the tradition and so on. And then you have his grandson, and he's not so rebellious, but he's also far away because he's the son of the wicked one. And he's sort of very simple and innocent about everything, but he's far away. And he can still say something like, well, you know, my grandfather was a rabbi, right? Because his grandfather is the wise son. But then his son, which is fourth generation, is really, he's in the Seder, but he has no idea what's going on. He doesn't understand the words. He doesn't understand the associations. He's like basically waiting for all this to pass. He doesn't know how to approach it. He doesn't know how to ask questions. It means he doesn't know how to approach this. But then the Rebbe said, "There's by now, we have a fifth generation. And the fifth generation, they're not even going to the Seder night. Why should they? Their father couldn't ask questions. He couldn't approach it. Their parents are so detached, so far away. Why should they bother to even go to the Seder? They could clearly see that their parents, it was just an agony for them. They just wanted to pass. So to pass over them, they wanted Passover to pass over them. So he really passes over the Passover meal, and he just goes and travels the world. He goes to India, he goes to South America, he goes to Europe, he goes wherever he wants, and leave me alone with your crazy Pesach ideas." And the Rebbe, so this is just the fifth element, right? We had the fifth element every time was like the messianic, the highest level one. This one seems to be the very, very opposite. It's going all the ways farthest from the Torah, farthest from faith, farthest from everything. But the Rebbe said, no, don't, you misunderstand this person. This person is looking for God's essence, infinite essence. He will not settle for less. He wants either it's real and total and infinite and experiential and something that is really fills me up and shakes me to the core of my being, or I'm not there. So if your Seder is just a boring night of everyone sitting and reading, and it's not something that touches my heart and my soul, I'm not going to be there. But if it will touch my heart and soul, then I will be there, and I will bring something amazing to the table, because I will bring this journey of searching and looking for Hashem, for God. So the Rebbe said, no, we need to go and find that fifth son. We need to build Chabad houses and do outreach and go all over the world and build a network of houses so that everywhere in the world you can have a Passover night, and then all the fifth sons will come in, and then they will, and this is a very basic concept in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, which says that once someone is far away, and then he comes closer to God, he goes up, he sort of goes up higher than even the most righteous people, because they were there all along. But he is sort of bouncing like a ball that you throw down, and then it bounces up and it goes even higher than where you threw it from. So this, he goes up even higher than the righteous one. This is called the Baal Tshuva. The returnee is in a level that's higher than the most righteous person. So in this fifth son, who's the farthest, and he comes back, he goes all the way up, and he becomes, in many ways, he becomes Elijah the prophet himself. He could mistakenly drink from the fifth cup because he doesn't know, and embody Elijah the prophet, and he would be there and ask amazing questions that no Jewish ear has ever heard, because he would ask questions that come from his journeys. He would tell stories about how he discovered God in the middle of India, or in the middle of some ashram, or in the jungle. And all this spirit of adventure and spirit of search he would bring to the table, and this would be a messianic light. And what I didn't say is that the word in Hebrew for fifth, right, chamishi, the fifth element, chamishi is the same letters as meshichi, messianic. The fifth level is messianic. And the fifth son is the most messianic. He seems to be the least, but he's the most messianic. And he really embodies everything. And he wants to do aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and he wants to build the temple, and he wants everything to be real and fulfilled, and he wouldn't settle for less, right? That's the idea. Now, the final thought, just to conclude all of this, is that there's something about this relationship between the four orderly elements and the fifth hidden element, which is the messianic one. It's the crazy chaotic one. It's crazy in a good way, right? It's crazy in a high way. It's something that opens up. This is what I said in the beginning, that you're coming into this night and everything is orderly, but you need to be open for surprises. There is going to be a guest that does something unexpected. There's going to be maybe one of your kids who's a little bit like the black sheep, and he may be annoyed, or something is going to break, something is going to be out of order. And that's really where you need to connect to the fifth level within yourself, which is the level that's above the order, above the control, above the structure, and that's open to really God's infinite light sort of coming in. And this is the main thing, the main part we need to focus on, coming into the Seder night. So now this whole relationship between the four and the five is very similar to what we see in Egypt. Egypt was a very, very orderly empire, state, and it was very sane. They could build pyramids, they could enslave a whole people. That requires a lot of discipline. It's evil, but it's something that is very impressive in terms of how, of the bureaucracy of it. And so they were very, very structured. But on top of this very structured country, empire, was a very crazy, irrational king whose name was Pharaoh. And Pharaoh in Hebrew, the word Pharaoh, paro, is the same letters, same root as lifroah. Lifroah is to take apart, to dismantle, to break, and to scatter. And all this is coming from paro. So in many ways, this entire model of something very structured with something very unexpected and wild above it, it was in Egypt, but in a very negative, it was a negative version of this concept. And you can see, by the way, that he's very stubborn, Pharaoh. He refuses. He makes his heart become stiffer and harder, and he doesn't let the Israelites out. And at some point, the people around him, his advisors, they tell him, can't you see they're winning? Can't you see we're losing? Can't you see we're just going to get another plague and another plague? Release them. So they're sane. They know what they're doing. Their heads is mounted on their shoulders. But he is just crazy. He's destructive. But the idea is, and this is a very deep Kabbalistic idea, is that every negative thing in the world can be rectified using a positive version of the same thing. So when we look at Egypt, and we're out of Egypt, where we're looking at Egypt, we're thinking about Egypt because we're celebrating coming out of it. And we have to realize that we need to emulate the structure, but rectify it. Do it in a positive way, the same structure. And this is called, in Kabbalistic Hasidic thinking, we need a holy Egypt, and we need a holy Pharaoh to rule the holy Egypt. So the holy Egypt is holy order. This is the Seder. This is the halachic regulations. Halacha, Jewish law, is all about having an orderly life. And this is called Mitzrayim Dekdusha, Holy Egypt. And we didn't come out of Egypt to be wild. We didn't come out of Egypt to wander aimlessly in the wilderness or through life forever. That's not freedom. That's just another kind of weird slavery to myself. Real freedom, real freedom from all kinds of slavery and bondage, is having good and aligned and very holy boundaries and rules and structures to my life. I need discipline. I need order. I need to build my family around certain values. I need, and the day needs to be ordered, the week, the month, the year, life in general. I need laws and rules and boundaries. And this is what the Torah gives us on the revealed level of the Torah. It's all about halakha and laws and commandments and the details of those commandments. This is the Holy Egypt. But if it would be just the Holy Egypt, it would be another form of very, very subtle constraints, because then we could think that God is only about laws and rules and the details of the law, the letters of the law, and that's it. That's all that God and serving God is all about. Did you do the exact commandment the way you needed to do it? Did you observe that exact halakha? And also, this is very important. It's a holy Egypt. It's a holy Mitzrayim. It's holy laws. But if it's just that, then we are limiting God. We're experiencing God in a very limited, constrained way. But God is infinite. He didn't just create the Jewish people in the Torah. He created the whole wide world. And he created a lot of chaos in this world and a lot of crazy, beautiful, amazing, unexpected stuff that's going on. And we need a holy Pharaoh to rule over the holy Egypt. What is the holy Pharaoh? The holy Pharaoh is a place within us that's connected to God's infinite super rational light and is there expecting the unexpected and being connected to new lights and new ideas and things that maybe even shake the structures of the way we're used to having things, like the child who's the black sheep, like the guest, the unexpected guest, like anything that's out of the ordinary, even tragedies that happen or with disasters that strike, whatever it is, we need to have a higher, a fifth level within ourselves. And this is the holy Pharaoh. And in the Zohar, it says that this Pharaoh is the source of infinite light. Again, it's the holy root of Pharaoh. Pharaoh, the actual Egyptian Pharaoh, was a sort of caricature of this holy root of the Pharaoh, which is simply the place of being connected to God's messianic, universal, infinite light, which is really what is supposed to surround and hover above and lie at the very heart, at the very center of the Seder night. So when you're going to sit with your family in the Seder night, I urge you to keep this sort of tension in mind. You need, and it's even reflected, by the way, in the way that we sit. We sit, but we're also leaning to the side. And you're leaning to the side, you're a little bit outside of the Seder. So you need to be inside the Seder, but also a little bit outside of it, listening, opening up to things that God is telling you that are not in the Haggadah. They're in the actual conversations, in the meetings, and especially in the unexpected element that bursts in and seems to break the pre-planned order, but is really a reflection of a higher divine order that's coming into your Seder night. So I wish you all a very happy and kosher Passover meal. And just one last thing. There's always the day after. The day after Passover, we begin a very, very special period of time in the Jewish calendar called the counting of the Omer. These are the 7 weeks, 7 times 7, 49 days, leading up from Passover to Shavuot, the festival of weeks, and which is the 50th day from Passover. And this period of time has a lot of meanings in Kabbalah and Chassidut. It's based on the Kabbalistic Sefirot, and it's a sort of inter-inclusion of 7 Sefirot, 7 times 7. And it's a time for contemplation and inner work. And I wrote a digital book that you can buy. I call it 50 Shades of Light. Because that's what it is. That's the counting of the Omer. It's 50 shades of light leading up to the great light of Shavuot. And you can buy it using the link that you can find somewhere around here. And then you get a digital book with messages, 50 messages for each day of the counting of the Omer. You also have the blessings there and the counting itself and an explanation about the counting. So you have everything you need. And you, when you get that, you also get to join a very special WhatsApp group in which I send the messages every day. So every day you get the actual message to your phone, and you have the ebook that contains all of it. So look for the link. I'll put it somewhere here, and you're very, very welcome to join and be in our group. And again, I wish you all a very, very happy, very kosher, very open, infinite, experience the infinite light of the Pesach, the Passover, with your family and loved ones. Chag Kasher V'Sameach. This video was made possible through the kind support of my sponsors over at Patreon. Patreon is a great way to help independent creators like myself produce original content. If you'd like to get more English language videos from me, please consider becoming a supporter via Patreon. You can find the link in the description below. Thank you very much.